Welcome to this At Any Rate podcast. I am Arindam Sandilya from JP Morgan's Global FX Strategy team. And today I'm joined by my colleague, James Nelligan in London to discuss the outlook for FX amidst what promises to be, I think, an action-packed event-laden week next week. We got six central bank meetings in G10, including two biggies, the Fed, of course, and the BOJ, as well as flash PMI releases in G7 that do end up having some sort of FX market impact. But for most of us in FX markets, sort of laboring under the yoke of tight ranges in low vol markets, you know, these event risks, event catalysts bring the hope that there can be a range break. And we had thought that the first batch of potentially market-moving data releases since last Friday, so the non-farm payrolls and the CPI in particular, would give us some sort of direction, but that hasn't entirely been the case so far. So maybe, James, I can start by probing you on those data releases. Now, there was some movement in markets after the PPI, but on the whole, we are still stuck in this 102, 104 range for the DXY. So if you take the totality of the data, the NFP, the CPI, and the PPI, you know, were you surprised by this somewhat tepid market reaction, or do you feel like this is exactly what nuanced data can bring in the presence of market positioning that's not clearly one-sided in either direction?
Thanks, Arindam. Yeah, I think, so obviously, as you say, we got upside surprises on all three of those prints, although the payrolls was maybe a bit more ambiguous with the higher unemployment rate and undershoot on wage growth. But personally, I'm not surprised by the lack of reaction in the dollar. For me, it comes down to the balance between that strength in the US data against the recent broadening out of improvement in the global manufacturing cycle that our global economists have been writing about. And in that world, the dollar is a bit trapped, really, between, you know, the right hand side of the smile and the middle of the smile, especially with Germany kind of lagging that improvement in global manufacturing. So the question for the FX market then becomes, you know, how do you navigate that better world for global manufacturing in a world where the dollar is in a bit more of a range? And that's why we've been kind of upping our conviction on currencies like stocky recently. But the dollar also obviously a bit constrained by the rates market itself. So rates quite hesitant to price out Fed cuts beyond what's implied by the dots. And for euro dollar, we have seen some convergence towards 110 fair value on the model, but you know, with spot up around 109, but breaking out those model components there really speaks to what's going on. You've got, you know, rate spreads widening slightly on the solid US data and some kind of emerging independence of the ECB from the Fed. We saw those comments from Knot this week lighting up a June cut from the ECB, but you've also got aggressive tightening in periphery spreads, which speaks to the more stable global growth environment for risk assets. So both of those forces they're offsetting forces for the dollar. So for me, it's no surprise the dollar didn't react much. You're kind of trapped between those two forces. And I think this year you have to be a bit smarter about how you construct the view on any kind of growth improvement. Back to you, Arindam. So the March FOMC next week is a big meeting, obviously, with, as we discussed before, it's an SEP meeting, and the data hasn't entirely played to script since the last SEP meeting in December. What are the key things to look for there? And in particular, what can change and move FX markets? Can there be enough in the meeting to cause a range break in the dollar?
Hey, James. You know, the disclaimer is that at the time that we are recording this podcast, we don't have a formal FOMC preview from our US economist yet. So these are just my own observations, and I'm looking for three things. First, as you said, the data hasn't entirely played to script since that dovish Fed pivot in December. So how has the committee absorbed and processed the data flow over the past 2 months? And is it, you know, most critically reflected in the dot plot? So our US fixed income strategists noted yesterday that the bar for a 2024 median policy rate dot to shift from three cuts to two cuts is not high. Only two people need to change their projections. So if that happens, I think it'll be market moving, because right now the rates market is using the three median cuts in the SEP as the floor for 2024 Fed pricing. You move that floor, I think the rate market reacts sharply and the dollar can rally a fair bit as a result. So that's one. Second, also going to be as critical is how Chair Powell himself characterizes the Fed's stance on monetary policy. Just last week at the congressional testimony, he said that the committee is not far from beginning to ease. Now, whether he retains that characterization, even in the face of any dot plot shifts, will be interesting to see. My own sense is that any hawkish change in the plots will be smoothed, will be counterbalanced by dovish messaging from Chair Powell to avoid markets completely running away in one direction and to avoid giving the impression that the Fed is doing a U-turn on their December pivot. And third, I'm curious to hear how he answers any questions on financial conditions in the Q&A. The fact is that by almost any measure, US FCIs are looser today than at any time since the December meeting, right? And he has spoken about in the past for the need for harmony between those financial conditions and what the Fed is trying to achieve with the economy. So just how harmonious, how aligned those two things are, is there a feedback loop from, let's say, looser FCIs into less easy policy rate settings? You know, that's something I'm keen to hear from him on. But net-net, I feel like, you know, this meeting does have the makings of a hawkish surprise, especially by the dots. And it is true that SEP meetings on average do end up being, you know, on average, moderately dollar bullish in the week following the meeting. But there are enough uncertainties here about the Fed reaction function, particularly about how dovish Chair Powell himself can sound, that I don't feel bold enough to bang the table and say, just go mega long dollars into the March Fed.
Yeah, agreed there. I agree. It's very much going to be about that balance between the dots on the hawkish side and how Powell maybe chooses to offset that on the dovish side. But obviously, before the Fed, we could have more fireworks in markets. You got BOJ potentially lifting policy rates for the first time in almost two decades, and investors don't really seem particularly enthused to buy the yen here. What gives there in your opinion?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it? You know, in theory, this should be a historic event. In practice, you know, those of us in FX markets, we've been talking about this particular event incessantly for the past year or year plus. And I sort of hate to admit it, but there is a sense of fatigue, of desensitization about the whole thing at this point. But let me say just three things about the meeting that I think can inform the view on the yen next week. First, I think if you didn't know anything about this particular BOJ meeting and the expectations surrounding it, you simply went by the price patterns in dollar yen around BOJs over the past year, you'd see a very predictable response of the currency. The market gets bulled up into the BOJ meetings, and that pushes dollar yen lower. Eventually, what you get is under delivery, disappointment, and then dollar yen bounces very sharply. Roughly by 1 to 1.5% over the following 2 to 3 weeks, i.e. this is classic FX buy the rumor, sell the fact type price action. Second, for this particular meeting, I think market expectations of negative interest rates going away have increased very sharply following a string of hawkish media leaks over the past couple of weeks, which makes our Tokyo guys think that given where the market stands today, the bar for the BOJ to out-hawk the market is extremely high. And for this meeting to do that, you need basically, you know, all three, a combination of asset purchases going away, YCC going away, and a rate hike to happen simultaneously. You know, for what I think most people would agree, it's a gradualist central bank like the BOJ. I think that's asking for a lot. And then third, I think perhaps this is the jaded part of me talking, but I feel like negative rates will go away either today or tomorrow. Our house view is that it's going to go in June. Consensus thinks either the March meeting or the April meeting. But I think what matters more for the yen rates market and yen FX is the policy path beyond the NERP, on which I think A, there is much less discussion, and B, I think there's much greater divergence of views amongst people. And I think both of those are perhaps because the uncertainties associated with that question are much larger. And I think sitting here, all I can say with some degree of conviction is that the BOJ will probably stay behind the curve vis-a-vis inflation. And by the way, we did get very strong Shunto numbers today suggesting that the full economy-wide wage growth could be somewhere in the order of 2.5% to 3% this year versus 2.1% last year. So inflation definitely has arrived in Japan. It's not clear to me that BOJ will be ahead of that phenomenon. So slow walking of rate policy means that this real rate drag on the yen is unlikely to dissipate on a trend basis, which means that these strong retail outflows that we've talked about in this podcast before and that we're seeing through this NISA program will likely continue. But as ever, you know, all of these things don't unfold in a straight line. We do know that short yen positioning is elevated. There can be confusion about the BOJ rate path going forward. So you know, I see the next few days being quite volatile for the yen. Now, back to you, James. You know, we discussed Fed, we discussed the BOJ. I do get the feeling that those are the big two central bank meetings next week, but the overall FX price action could end up being underwhelming because of this, you know, tug of war between the opposing forces we just discussed. It's generally the case that smaller central bank meetings that fly relatively under the market's radar can actually end up offering more tradable opportunities. You know, for you sitting in London, you know, your three European meetings next week, do you think that's a fair characterization of those three? What are you expecting out of the Bank of England, Norges, and S&P next week?
Yeah, I think certainly two of the three have plenty of room for surprise. So for the S&P, pricing has come off a lot from the teens to now only around 6 basis points for a cut next week. So clearly there would be a big move in Swissie if they were to cut. Our base case is actually June for the first cut, but they did say in December that they're happy to move ahead of other central banks, and inflation's obviously running below their forecasts. So we wouldn't be totally surprised at a March cut, but it might be a bit preemptive in a world where the policy rate is already quite low and that they don't have much room to cut, which doesn't exactly lend itself to the strategy of cutting early. Norges Bank is the other candidate for a potential surprise. You've had dovish surprises on inflation and wage negotiations this week, and the risk is really that the rate path shows some probability of a cut in June, which would weaken Nokia. What stood out to me this week for Nokia was you had that breakout higher in oil and Nokia actually weakened, which was partly this feedback through of higher commodities to the rates market. So Nokia, from that perspective, looks a bit asymmetrically bearish to me. Finally, Bank of England, most likely no surprises there. I think it'll be very similar to the February meeting. You know, inflation and wage growth still far too sticky. And so, you know, for any bearish sterling view, it's really around waiting for that disinflationary progress to come through in a market that's already quite long in terms of positioning.
Understood. Then finally, any parting thoughts on the flash PMIs next week? They do tend to move FX markets once in a while, don't they?
Yeah, for me personally, I know not many people share this view, but these PMIs, I think, are the highlight of the week after the BOJ for me. I don't think Powell has seen enough to change his tone. And so really, FX now is more about what's going on with the global manufacturing cycle and the PMIs. And, you know, as we've discussed, we've seen some broadening out in the improvement at the global level. And the lead indicators we look at suggest there's potentially more progress to come. Obviously, last month you had German manufacturing really lagging that improvement. So that will be interesting to monitor. And obviously that has informed our use of euro as a funding currency. But for currencies like Stocky, we've been talking about a kind of handover from yields to growth, where the global PMIs are suggesting some kind of organic growth coming through that's maybe less yield dependent. And that means currencies like Stocky that were very sensitive to yields in Q4 and are now a bit less sensitive. So at the global level, you know, there's potentially evidence of a bit of a restocking cycle coming through. You've got inventories and new orders ticking higher at the same time as orders inventory spreads are moving higher. So that kind of dynamic is very much worth watching. And as we mentioned, you know, typically the dollar would weaken on this, but you have several offsetting forces, you know, one of which not least is the tariff risk premium that's still there in the dollar. So I think this year you have to be a bit smarter about how you construct the view around any growth improvement. And that's why we're quite focused on other currencies like stocky at the moment.
Understood. Very interesting. So plenty to look forward to next week. Well, good luck for navigating all of those event risks. Let's leave it there for this week. With that, we come to the end of this podcast. Thanks very much for listening in. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on March 15th, 2024.